This is CliffCentral.com.
John Flismas, it's always nice to see you. And I really could talk to you every other day. Someone said to me the other day, oh, John Flismas, you must get him on again. I said, again? He was on like 3-4 months ago. The guy, he's promoting a new show, so he's not here for his health.
Yes.
But how's that going?
It's going very well. I've done quite a long, 5 weeks of the show.
You're wrapping up on Sunday, right?
Wrapping up on Sunday, so it's the last week, weekend. And it's been amazing. It's in a tiny venue. It's very intimate. I get to do the show 30 times in 6 weeks. So I've done that. Wednesdays and Thursdays and Sundays, I haven't sworn. Fridays and Saturdays.
You kept it clean, huh?
Kept it clean.
Look at you. You're flexing your muscles. You see, this is like,
my muscles.
This is what happens when you become a master. I sat in an amazing discussion with a guy who I've always kind of admired from afar because I thought his writing was really good. And he tells a good story, and that's Malcolm Gladwell the other day. And,
right.
He wrote that seminal work on 10,000 hours.
Yes.
And when you've done 10,000 hours, you're a master.
Right.
And what you've just shown is that you don't have to go blue, you don't have to go clean, you can do both.
You know,
this is experience talking.
It's just the audience and the mic. It's the stripped down t-shirt, jeans, and then a topic. And
are you so comfortable on stage that it almost feels better than real life?
I think it might.
Really? That's fantastic.
It's a bit scary. It is like that is real life, which is a worry for the people in my life.
you're in a place now, I suppose, where you don't have to second guess what's about to come out of your mouth by worrying about the repercussions of it like you might have when you were starting off in the comedy business and you didn't know how to get a crowd onto your side.
Right.
And when we went through that stage, and we're still maybe going through it, where people don't know how to use social media, so they quote you out of context and you're constantly in the shit.
Yeah.
But I think for you, people also know you now. You've had enough wiggle room because of your reputation and the years of experience that you have had, that people go, that's John Flismas. They're willing to accept things they don't agree with or they're horribly offended by. And at the same time, they're willing to give you the benefit of the doubt because they know you're funnier and clever than them.
Yeah, I think it is cool to become your own disclaimer.
I think that's
the ease of it. So it is about being a bit selfish and not doing what the crowd wants because it takes you down to sort of a lowest common denominator. You play the room, and that's how you end up doing jokes with stereotypes and kind of broad. This show is more tactical, and it's difficult for the audience because the white audience can struggle with the theme.
Yeah, your show is called The Good Racist.
Absolutely.
So I imagine you would be able to point out, In sometimes a mean way, but normally more of a sarcastic, ironic way, the fact that, because white people don't know when they're being racist.
No, they absolutely don't. And they deny, you know, they see it as a right-wing khaki wearing marching racism, which they deny with outrage, but they're quietly,
Mavis allowing, is a part of the family.
Exactly. You know, some of my best friends are black. You know, all of these things that emerge. But I'm dating a black person. How can I be racist? They don't see the inherent racism in even that statement.
Yes. Well, good luck to you trying to take that shit on. I wouldn't go near it. All right. But the point I wanted to get to was that you're now at a stage really in your career where you can have a whole lot of fun with it. And it's a business.
Yep.
You know what you're doing in terms of the business of it. You've helped a lot of other comics to make it a business for themselves.
Right.
And I saw you put our own Mark Mdluli on the...
Absolutely, Mark. So there were 30
on
spots.
The opening act. That's very nice.
Yeah. So there are 30 spots available over this run. So I figured instead of giving it to one person, just open it to everyone on social media and say, if you're a new comedian, just get hold of me and you'll get 3 spots. So Mark just finished his 3. He was great. And I don't even know who's coming tonight, but it's going to be fun.
That's fantastic. You see, you're creating things for other people too. Isn't that nice?
Yeah.
You philanthropist, you.
Oh, yeah, I'm a saint.
You went to The Gathering. How was that?
It was cool. So we produced The Gathering. It's one of my projects. And it was incredible yesterday that...
First of all, Nkosa Sana Dlamini Zuma dropped out.
Dropped out, as did Zweli Mkhize. And
because it's too hot for them right now.
I think it's too hot. And so all the presidential hopefuls dropped out.
Well, do you know where they were?
They were at an extraordinary meeting, weren't they?
They were at a dinner with the president.
Right.
Look at this. All these motherfuckers. Look at them.
Look at them.
Cyril.
There they all are.
All standing there with Gedleyihle Ghiza.
Bunch of idiots. Lindy, we also dropped out at the last
minute.
Of course. So I think they all decided dinner would be awkward if they went
to
the gathering
first denouncing the president. So, okay, who did you have? Who was the star of the show?
Well, from an arsehole point of view, I would say that Jimmy Manye was fantastic, or Mzwanele, as he now calls himself in his new propaganda version. Just sheer talking anus syndrome. He genuinely believes what he says. I've even been
so he's told. He's a conscious fraud.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's unbelievable. You know, I sat with him once at a dinner where he very confidently told me how we were very lucky that they saved us from Pravin Gordhan when they did. And, you know, and then when you argue with them, you become a white monopoly capitalist, or, you know, one of the Gupta tropes, you know, that was, you know, cooked up by white people in London.
What a guy, though. You've got to admire the fact that he's bought into this bullshit.
It's unbelievable. So and the rot. And I like the little shockwave that was sent through everyone looking at what happened in Zimbabwe, because they weren't replaced by anything noble. They were just replaced by force, and that could happen here.
So in other words, it didn't even need to be civil society. It was like a palace coup, right?
Absolutely. In the most non, people were killed, and no one's talking about that. They just killed people. People have
Where's
vanished.
Where's Jonathan Moyo now?
Where is he? Why are there bullet holes in his fridge? And so.
Listen, while we're on Jimmy Manye, I thought you said something very, very good. I agree with you 100%. All these braying, whinging, mewling people on social media about, we've got to get ANN7 off the DSTV bouquet. Mm. How can DSTV charge us and pay money to ANN7? I hate those people.
Right.
They don't ever go deep enough. These are the kind of people, the enemies of reason.
Right.
ANN7 being on DSTV is not the problem. Please explain.
Well, obviously, it's not about that. From a journalistic sense, they have every right to be on television.
And we want to see what their agenda is, for heaven's sake.
Yes, and the stupidity of those people is, by what criteria do you judge ANN7 to not be valid? And therefore, do you apply those criteria to everything else? Or is it just your privilege giving you a chance to tweet about something new, emotional issue?
No, because everyone is virtue signaling the hell out of Twitter at the moment. They're telling everybody how good they are by standing up against bad things, which are obviously bad, which it doesn't make you heroic to stand up against. It's like saying, I'm not going to buy the gluten-free product today. I'm going to buy the gluten product today. Yes. And you expect everyone to pat you on the back and go, you're so brave.
Yeah, well done.
You're so brave. Go out into the front lines. If you're so anti-ANN7, go and sit outside their offices and swear at them until they stop.
Exactly. Or help the investigation into the fraud. That's the important part.
Yeah, and the state capture. And the fact that this family are dragging Eskom and Transnet and everything else through the road.
It was a great moment. That particular panel was great because Jacques Po and Manye were in the same panel, which I thought was really an interesting conversation.
Wow.
And it was great. It was just brilliant to watch Jacques Po, obviously a bit of he's a heavyweight. He, from the old days, you know, he would be like, just watch my roast. I'm just going to go to Russia quickly. So he was a really hardcore but very gracious about everything. And Jimmy Manye was trying his best to throw stuff at him. And I've just been reading the Gupta bot trolling this morning at all of us, actually, for being involved. And it's incredible the kind of...
Is Jimmy the front man for that whole movement?
Well, I think
he's the guy. I mean, like, because there's got to be one guy who leads the charge, right?
Yeah, he is the slickest spin doctor that they've had so far. He's charming. He's funny. He deals with things in a really light way. Oh. I thought Julius was off his game yesterday as well. He made some really dumb comments about stuff. Normally, he's quite sharp.
You know what I think might have happened there? And this is pure conjecture on my part. I can't substantiate it in any way. I think that the EFF's become a real party and it's removed their teeth.
Yeah, it's taken out that, like,
you know,
energy.
Like Buyiseni used to say something outrageous about land. Then he'd say something about education policy. And he'd get us thinking differently about things. And now they've become a real party.
Yeah, it's
and
a
they're
boring.
Contesting the election and all of this. So
they're being sensible.
Yeah, well, not sensible. They're being politicians.
Politician. They're politicking. Yeah, absolutely.
And that's sad because they were an outlier.
Absolutely. You know, they were an interesting to listen to.
So, what did he say stupid things about?
Well, he just compared things. You know, he spoke about Robert Mugabe with great love, and he basically his statement was that Robert Mugabe's only crime was that he stuck around too long.
Yeah, but we know that this, if you examine this on a psychological level, we know this is because Julius needs a daddy. It's the same reason he fell in love with Jacob Zuma.
Right.
Then when he was so upset with Jacob Zuma, it's because his dad spurned him.
He needs a dad.
He wants a dad. So Julius is a damaged child
right.
who wants a daddy in his life.
Yeah.
And he just wants hugs from daddy and kisses from daddy and daddy to tell him, you've done well, boy.
Yeah, so
that's
dad,
what it is.
Yeah,
so
I guess.
If when he lost the dad figure in Jacob Zuma, he transferred all of that into Robert Mugabe, you know, this powerful African man who's been able to wrest this country under his control.
Yeah, he went next door and knocked on the door and said, will you be my dad?
That's the whole point. And now he's dealing with like a Stockholm syndrome almost.
Mm, yep, yep.
Of this guy was a bad dude, but I'm going to stand up for him because yes. he loved me.
Yeah, classic kid with a problem parent.
Like, that's it.
He loves me. I know he hits me, but he loves me.
Right.
Yeah.
So what do we do with that? We could see where it's coming from. What else did he say?
Yeah. He spoke a bit about...
this is meant to be about you, by the way, but let's get into it.
No, sure. I mean, his huge plan is he feels that the current policy about education is wrong, where we're going to loan students money and then they should pay it back. But then his next comment was, we're going to start a national bank whose first job will be to give out loans interest-free.
Because we know government has run everything else really well. Let's give them more things to do that
more
they can
admin,
fuck up.
More complication.
I mean, let's just name one parastatal you're really chuffed with.
Done really well. Exactly.
So, name one thing that the government, even social grants, which is just, it's really just about taking money and giving it to people.
Exactly.
There's no process, there's no learning, there's no improvement, there's no acclimatization, there's no end result you're looking for. You don't go to them and check, like, what did you spend your money on?
No.
It's really just, you're poor. This is the most patronizing thing you could do.
Yes.
But for socialists, they seem to think it's a great plan. The most tremendous plan. So you hand
it's going to be huge.
You hand out money to poor people. It's as straightforward as it gets for government. And
yes.
they fuck that up as well. Completely.
It's a whole, you just get the stuff on bulk. You break it into small packets.
This is what I don't get about him. Like, Julius is smart. Right?
He's not, no doubt.
He may have emotional problems. We all do.
Yeah.
He still is willing to say it's better to trust the state, people who win a popularity contest.
Yes.
And let them administer everyone's lives.
From the cradle to the grave.
Than to let people individually administer their own lives and have as little government involved as possible.
Yeah, so basically we must treat ourselves as idiots.
Well, that's the thing about people on that part of the left, is that they believe you're too dumb to look after yourself. So
yes.
it's actually a deeply, I would say racist, but in this case it's like almost black on black, so you can't use that term.
Yes.
But in any other situation, it would be. It's very patronizing.
Patronizing. Certainly. Colonial attitude, actually.
Correct. It's like, shame, the natives aren't able to look after themselves, so we shall make sure that they have reserves of grain. I mean, the Romans used to hand out bread.
Yes.
The emperor would make sure that every week there was free bread for the poor.
Yeah.
Because if he didn't feed them, they'd eat each other.
Right, or try and eat the rich.
And these are Romans. And, you know, or eat the rich, God
yes.
forbid.
Yes.
So this is why, I don't know where this, we have to evolve somewhere out of this at some
absolutely.
Point, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot of confusion between dignity and this kind of endless charity.
Yeah. What is it? Here's something I've wanted to pick your brain on for a long time. What is it about toilets? Helen Ziller has been embroiled in toilet
yes.
sagas.
Yes, there's a toilet
Jacob
trope.
Zuma has been involved in toilet sagas. Toilets seem to be, for a lot of people, the mark of the absolute minimum of dignity.
Right.
Which is so sad because our ancestors, all white and black, only really started shitting into a thing.
Yes.
About 1,000 years ago, maybe.
Right, right.
All of us, no matter
absolutely.
Where you come from in the world, we just shat wherever before then. So how come the toilet, the humble toilet, has
yes.
become a symbol for so many people of the first rung of dignity? Because you see it happen in...
It's like Maslow's hierarchy. The first one is actually the shitter. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you and I are laughing about this, but this is... You see communities who are outraged that they have to use an outside bog,
yes.
for example. But it didn't bother them so much when they were living in the rural sort of northwest and there wasn't a bog
yes.
and nobody thought about a bog. And they didn't feel undignified. They were proud people.
Yeah.
So what kind of mental aberration is this? Have you thought about that at all?
You know, in comedy, you try and find the quickest reference point for a large group of people, and then you cross-reference it with something else. I mean, that's ultimately what a joke is. I think entertainment, as it's dumbed itself down.
That was very profound, actually.
Was it?
Yeah. I'm going to have to rewind and listen to that again.
Yeah, this is back to this deep stuff. I think so what's happened with entertainment as we've dumbed it down, because we spend a lot of money making things more stupid, is we go for symbols in the media that give us the immediate emotional response. So the toilet's become a symbol. And then when you have someone, especially a child, another symbol, drowning in a toilet, you've got a very powerful conflation of story. And it's awful that anyone should ever drown in a toilet, I mean, obviously. But we use those things to fire missiles at each other using the media, because the media is not really to tell you what happened and give you any form of reportage or analysis. It's emotainment, especially on devices. You read news in bits. So I have a feeling that might be why toilets have become this kind of...
It's a good analysis.
Thanks.
Because it's bothered me when I see it in the news often. And I think... You know, where people are shitting shouldn't be as important as this.
Yeah.
But I think maybe it's become emotive. It's become about being left out of civilization.
Yeah. And in fact, working with the Daily Maverick for a long time on The Gathering has given me such a good window on real reporting, as opposed to the crap we get in the media. There's no real analysis anymore.
I want to talk about the media with you. First of all, there isn't any real analysis. There's no depth whatsoever. And we've got such shoddy journalism and such... shallow arguments.
Completely, yeah.
If they were toilets, no one would drown in them.
Exactly, you couldn't.
What is it about South Africa that we have... Long-form journalism is finished.
Yeah, gone.
It exists in podcasts, maybe,
yeah,
in terms
yeah,
of conversations.
Some, sure.
Like, you know, and I'm not saying by any means that John and I are having a conversation is to be regarded as long-form journalism. But unless it's in a book like Jacques Poe's or...
Yeah.
It's in a conversation between two real intellectual giants. You don't have that anymore. It's all clickbait.
That's the best term for it, is clickbait. It's all just reduced to the words, that the least number of words that get the most amount of reaction.
And that's where Twitter drives me crazy, because it's almost like drone warfare.
Yep.
And I'm talking about this tomorrow. I'm doing a TED talk on this.
Oh, wow.
That the further you are from your enemy,
yep,
when you kill them, the less you care about it.
Absolutely.
And you will be the most barbaric, insensitive, callous, thoughtless human being if you can just send a drone to blitz an entire village of women, children, goats, everything.
Yep.
Because you're not there to see it.
It's data.
In fact, there was a World War II pilot, an American World War II pilot, who said, if we were on the ground seeing what our bombs are doing, we'd never do it.
Right.
And to me, social media is the same. It's that you're at such a distance from the person you're shouting at.
Yeah.
In 140 or 280 characters, and I want to know whether you think that makes a difference.
Right.
That's a kind of drone warfare. Yeah. And we're insensitive. You would never say that to a person in person.
Yeah.
I'd never say to you, John, you're such a cunt. I hope that your liver gets roasted by demons in hell. That you know, that horrible projectiles are fired up your asshole and into eternity. I would never say that to you. Well, I just have, actually.
Yeah, I mean, I did. I think you did it fairly. You did it with fair ease.
Conviction?
Fair ease,
okay,
yeah.
But you get my point. People would never behave like that normally.
No, the bravery of people would never be, you know.
Nomzamo, who lives in Durban, would never talk like that to Vukile.
No.
But because Vukile says something on Twitter and she feels, he's far enough away, I don't really know him, I'm going to be the worst kind of Nomzamo I can be.
Yeah, and the damage of it is increased, I mean, on social media, because the person getting the insults now has a perception that these are publicly available. It's not a private conversation.
Well, it isn't. Everyone else is watching you throwing missiles.
Absolutely, and watching you get missiles. So now you're not only worried about the insult, but now the reaction to your, you know, the other people watching you become insulted. So your dignity now, you think, although most of the people who throw the insults have got 8 followers. So,
But the danger is that maybe John Felismus isn't going to be as active on social media as he might have been.
100%.
And that, I think that's a loss for all of us. Not you just, but let's say all the smart people who have something valuable to contribute to society.
Yeah.
And there could be intellectuals, there could be scientists, there could be philosophers, there could be politicians who are so busy brand managing that they don't go onto Twitter anymore or anywhere else.
Yeah.
Because the risk is so much bigger than the reward if it does work.
Yeah.
You know, the 3 or 4 people who appreciate you being thoughtful about something
doesn't
compare to the thousands who are outraged by everything. There's an outrage. They're junkies.
Absolutely.
They're outrage junkies.
People are convinced that they become activists by being clickbaiting or baited.
Because they get attention.
Absolutely. And then they feel better about themselves because they said that you're a dick for something you might have said, which they've misinterpreted. So the whole thing is such a mess.
It's so, like all these people piling on. Like, and I get it. You know, to me, men like Harvey Weinstein and Louis C.K., their behavior is unacceptable.
Yeah.
It's revolting. It's embarrassing. I'm not one of those people who takes responsibility for all men.
Right.
But that's embarrassing for everyone on the planet.
Yeah.
That you would jerk off in front of some girl who doesn't want you.
Absolutely.
In a bathrobe with your fat stomach hanging. Neither of those men are attractive.
Neither of them are attractive.
No girl has ever seen that kind of behavior and gone, I need me some more of that.
I wasn't horny before, but now I'm really horny. Yeah.
But everyone who's piling on now, oh, Harvey and Louis and men are trash and Me Too and everything.
The one lady, she said she was forced to listen to him whack off over the phone. Now,
you're not a victim, honey.
Come on. You know, I think you're jumping on here.
Yeah, come on.
Hang up.
Hashtag Me Too, please. And if you stayed on the line, you wanted an Oscar.
Yeah.
And all those women who did and that we don't know about that got Oscars, I'm looking at you, Meryl Streep.
So many Oscars in that man-infested pig hole.
No, the point that I'm trying to get at, and I think you are probably on the same side as me, although I'll never assume that about you, is that there's a lot of victim Olympics happening too. So people, first of all, are outrage junkies. So they love getting upset about something that doesn't affect them at all.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they also get offended on other people's behalf, which is
100%.
Totally illogical.
Yes.
And then they want to be more of a sufferer than everyone else. So you'll have someone who's had a really awful experience. And it's like those irritating people at a braai. You're telling a story not because you necessarily want them to go, oh, shame.
Yes.
You say, you know, I shut out my pancreas the other day. Someone says, oh, that's nothing.
Yes.
I shut out my heart and my liver and my pancreas.
I have a friend who, yeah, exactly.
And you're like, that's not why I told the story.
No.
Those people aren't fun to talk to.
No, well, there's a huge there's this huge assumption on social media that being something makes you an expert on it. So in other words, just because you're a human, it doesn't make you an expert on humanity at all. Having a race does not make you an expert on racism. You know, people speak on behalf of white people because they're white.
What's that all about?
It's bullshit.
I didn't have a meeting with the other whites you could go and represent us with the blacks.
Well, it's like saying, you know, I've got a brain, therefore I'm a brain surgeon. What are you talking about? Like, you're a dick. Come on, man. And only because for the first time in my life, I'm actually like studying and I have to turn in assignments and I'm learning about academic like rigor.
Like the scientific method.
Exactly. You see, and now suddenly I'm realizing what a lot of shit it is on Twitter that people treat it as a space where you can be an expert anonymously with no like background checks. There's no academic rigor. There's nothing. So now we have to, and I always use this example in the show, like you could be a fucking model. Why do I have to listen to you? Your job is to show up and face the right way. That is your entire way of earning a living. And now we have to listen to your fucking discourse on social dynamics.
What do you think of these people who call themselves influencers or ambassadors for something or social media experts?
Do you know what I mean? I get shit for free because I have no real credibility. That's kind of what I call those people. Do you know what I mean? It's the shame. It's the shame of brands that have been untransformed. If we just get a young, popular black person to front this product, we'll give them free shit, which is basically the dope system, right?
You know what? Holy mother of God, you've just hit on something very powerful here. It's the dope system.
Well, we'll give you free shit. And I always say to young people, fuck it. Do you really work for sneakers?
Thank you, massa.
Do you know what I mean?
Thank you, massa.
You guys are amazing. You gave me free shoes. Fuck you, man. Fuck you for undervaluing your own credibility. And like you're giving brands, it's the dope system.
So should we be very suspicious of everybody who's a brand ambassador?
Yeah.
Okay.
Why not?
No,
I mean,
good.
If I think about it.
That's an absolute. I go with it.
You know, I don't know if there's an example offhand that I can think of where, I mean, Angelina Jolie is a UNICEF children's ambassador.
She doesn't get much for free, I suppose. Going to the Sudan occasionally is hardly a gift.
But she keeps adopting small percentages of nations. So
she's living the dream.
She's put in the work, I suppose. But I mean, if you look at people who represent brands, I mean, effectively, they own your opinion. I don't know if that's cool.
And these brands, they really are the devil in this whole thing, right? Because media and advertising. It's they always want to be well known. They want people to be aware of their brand. They want to sell stuff.
Yes,
but they certainly aren't willing to risk. Like, they're never going to come to John Flismas and say, "John, we'll sponsor your comedy tour." Because you might say something in the tour about one of their products, and then they'll run screaming for the hills and probably even sue you.
Yeah,
because it scares them to be portrayed in any way in a negative light. But they're selling oily, disgusting food, for example.
Something, you know,
that's probably manufactured in a dark room
by children
with chemicals by children with tiny
haven't slept. Yeah.
What's that all about? Why are these? Who's running these brands? Who are these marketing people that we're talking about?
So it's quite interesting. I mean, one of the guys that I really liked listening to yesterday was Andrew Feinstein. So he's the man who wrote the Shadow World book and other books about the arms deals. But he's basically based in London and he chases large organizations. That's right. And there are the arms dealers and manufacturers, but behind them are the governments that are basically heads of state who function as salesmen for massive arms corporations or BAE or whoever it might be. And they travel on these state visits, but what they're really doing is securing arms deals. Yeah. You know, his basic take was that, you know, pretty much every corporation is evil at some point, because they'll do anything to make a sale. But then again, if you want to balance the argument, say, well, if you can pull it off, if you can convince this influencer that you believe is such an independent, intelligent human being to sell their own credibility to you for money, well, then maybe we should say, well done.
Yeah, you know? And maybe if there's a market for the shit that you're selling, even if it's vile, nasty, unhealthy.
You mean like an iPhone?
Yeah, I mean, that's if you can sell that to someone and someone really wants it and you can give them their hit of dopamine.
Because what do we just say forever that all corporations are evil and we're stupid?
What do we
then?
We go back to what, agrarian peasants?
Yeah,
I mean, that's not going to be better than kind of like life this way. You can still make choices in this environment.
Yeah,
that's why I keep saying to communists, and there are still some, huh?
There are some communists,
they're proud. To them, how many more people must die for you to change your philosophy? I mean, less Jews died in World War II and people know fascism is bad.
Yes.
How many more people must die under communist governments?
Was communism opening 12 million balance?
Stalin,
yeah, on 12 million was Stalin.
So you still have to have that conversation. But they say to you, oh, no, I'm a communist. You say to them, listen, just answer this for me. I had this conversation with our friend Loyiso Gola the other day. Because Loyiso said to me, No, capitalism's the absolute evil. And I know capitalism's not necessarily great. We all get that.
Yeah, sure.
It's exploitative. Sure. And, you know, the slavery comes from that. And it was associated, even though it wasn't the policy of the apartheid government, they presented themselves, because they were on this side of the Iron Curtain, as being capitalist. We know that actually they were about totalitarianism.
Yes.
Which is a whole different
situation.
Thing.
Yeah.
But Loy and I had the biggest argument about this, because I said to him, look, if capitalism's so evil and communism's so good, and he said, no, I'm not on the side of communism, which is always kind of, but what else are you on the side of?
Yeah, essentially they're the poles.
You've got to
choose. Can move on a continuum between the two, but they're versions of the two.
Are you a little bit on this side, a little bit on that side? So I said to him, why is it that people never get in a boat in Florida and go to Cuba? Why doesn't that, and an inner tube?
Yes.
With like their one packet of, I don't know, sustenance, that the mushrooms or whatever they've got there to tide them over until they reach Havana.
Get to the freedom of social.
All the boats go one way. And even though capitalism is a very flawed and very sometimes unfair and unkind and hostile environment, and to many it is, it still seems to be the next best option for poor and middle-class people.
Sure. Isn't capitalism the most detailed essay on humanity ever? It's the perfect system for a flawed creature. We're as flawed as... That's what we came up with after 2 billion years of evolution. This is where we are.
Our magnum opus, huh?
This is our greatest creation. Because it's the one where the least people die. You know, it's the one where we have the least disagreement. Because the truth is, communism is just a case of how long can you hide the bad shit from everyone else until it all comes out. That's what communism really relies on, is we said it's a perfect system. We've applied humans. It's a total fuck up. And now we're going to hide it from you. We have curtains. We have iron curtains, because that's the only curtain that can hide what a fuck up this is from everyone.
What are you studying?
I'm doing an MBA.
Really?
Yeah, it's a weird choice, but I am.
What a thing to do to your good brain.
I know, it is. But I must tell you, I don't think it's about what you study. It's about the fact that you study. That's what I'm clinging to with every fiber of my being. It came up, I work with the business school. I'm doing some lectures at the business school at the same time.
Creative industries?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it. So at the end of the full MBA, you do some add-on electives, and I'm going to try and look at the creative industries in Africa.
But you haven't you already got degrees?
No, I have a brochure from the Natal Technicon.
This is terrific.
A higher diploma, which I don't even know what that means.
I want to be serious for exactly 5 minutes, with
right?
You, because I've said this before in a sort of jocular, sort of maybe slightly cynical way. Comedy, I will always include David Gao because he's also right. Done more than his fair share to
absolutely.
Raise comics.
Yeah, Dave's done a lot.
So Dave, he's, and in some ways he's like our Eddie Murphy.
I 100% agree with you on that,
and,
yeah.
There are other parallels that I'll draw, but some of them are not so fair.
Right.
This is a very different market. You made this a business opportunity, not, and I know that sounds so ugh, but
I know what you mean,
created
though.
The business of comedy,
yeah,
and certainly along the way you made the best, you made the capitalist model of it, you
right.
Made the best model of what comedy could be. You gave so many people who are talented and who have potential a place to show their wares and to sell them very often and to build amazingly successful careers. Some of them have gone beyond even your wildest
absolutely.
Expectations.
Yeah,
I've got to say, as someone who isn't in comedy, who appreciates what comics do for our society, I'm enormously grateful to you for that.
Oh, thanks.
You've done huge legwork. Well, you did all the heavy lifting.
Sure. I mean, it all came from a conversation I had with a British comedian in a very shabby room in Grahamstown one night while we were watching Independence Day. He was actually on mushrooms. And I brought up the fact that it was really funny that Americans finally had run out of enemies on Earth, and so they had to declare war on aliens. And then I said, how unlikely was it that a black guy and a Jewish guy would go to space and kill the aliens on behalf of the world? At which point he reminded me that we were watching Independence Day. At what point were we looking for logic? Anyway, he turned to me in his kind of hallucinating state and he said, you know, it must be very cool being a South African comedian. Basically, you're in an industry that doesn't exist where your friends decide how good you are. And that landed quite heavily on me. And I sat there in that little room and really had fuck all tools at that stage. It was a very, very long time ago. And I thought, fuck you. We're going to build this industry. Actually, fuck you. I'm not going to have that statement. And it's amazing what drives you. That was the moment where I thought, actually, what irritates me is that he's right. Mm. There were like six or seven of us.
Isn't it amazing? We get most upset by the things that are true.
Absolutely.
If I said your mother is this and I don't know your mom.
Yeah.
She might be horrible, but
yeah.
If I say something about her that isn't true,
it's like,
you're going to be like, my mom's not a whore, dude.
Yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
Move on. What kind of childish thing is that to say?
Yeah.
But the things that really get under our skin are the ones that have a little bit of truth in them and
100%.
It burns like hell.
Yeah.
I know the stuff that upsets me is where I'm already aware of my lack of ability in
right.
a specific area.
Yes, it irritates me.
And then someone brings
it
up, and I'm like, oh, shit, I was trying to hide that.
Yes, absolutely.
I was trying to improve that. Let's say not hide it.
Yeah, but now I know that you know it's there.
But you've done this, man. You've done it, and I wouldn't say single-handedly. There are lots of people, and you know,
big
along
team.
The way,
yep.
Sure. Along the way, you've obviously had to rely on good advice, and there have been people who've helped you, and all
sure.
that sort of thing. But really, you're the standout guy for this. You stand out for stand up.
But thanks.
And you can only really, I could never have had this conversation with you while you were in it.
No. No, and I may not be in it for much longer.
That's my next. What's the plan?
I'm not sure yet, but I'm getting very involved teaching and.
Do you like it?
I actually do. I find it really interesting. This show has been very interesting for me because it's a combination of comedy and almost like a lecture. So there's a lot of historical stuff, and there's a lot of like research, and there's a lot of I use a lot of like graphics and things to explain what I'm talking about, and it's very cool. I'm getting nice feedback. So I don't know. I don't know if I love the comedy industry as much as I used to. I'm very glad for everything that's happened, and it's been amazing. But I just find that comedy is evolving. It's becoming a different creature now. It's maturing into something a bit more superficial than it used to be. You know, and I see that as growth. Like, so there are Twitter champions and brand influencers that are emerging. Comics are becoming, you know, the face of a campaign. And I don't feel that that's seminal anymore. I feel that's sort of, it's good, but it's, I'll do what I do. And if people are keen to come along with me on that, that's fine. But I don't see myself being a mainstream. I don't want to host the Lurys anymore. I don't
want to be the Miley Cyrus of comedy.
That is exactly what I don't want to be.
And I saw Katy Perry hosting the MTV.
How was that?
It was horrible.
What was it?
She was wearing the space suit and she kind of, and then she talked shit like she was an alien reading the newspaper and she was trying to make sense. It was so puerile.
Yeah.
It's the only word I can think of that. We've become so smart. We've got smartphones. We've got an access to the world of information.
Yes.
We have enviable capacities and capabilities that any of our ancestors would have been flummoxed by.
Yes.
But we've become really stupid in so many ways.
Completely. We've gunned it down.
There's no desire to investigate anything on its merits.
Yes.
People are obsessed with being righteous.
Yeah, big time.
Regardless of whether what they're righteous about is true or not.
100%.
They invent straw men everywhere they go to fight against because it's so easy to win against these guys.
Yep.
And they immediately assume, like if you and I had an argument, and we have had before about stuff,
yep.
They would assume that that's aggression between us.
Yes, where it's just robust.
Robust. It's the best conversation I'll have in a week.
Absolutely. But exactly, we're afraid of it. So that's one of the things.
It's almost like we've infantilized ourselves.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's the safe space idea.
Absolutely.
And I don't know where that came from because that's neither a left or a right thing. But everyone's running for it now.
Yeah.
Like the right, these Nazis want to march in Charlottesville. And then when we call them out and we mock them and ridicule them online, they go, I've got freedom of expression.
Yeah, I've got rights to be a Nazi. What?
You don't really. Your idea's shit. And it deserves to have the full spotlight shone on it.
Yes.
And to be examined. But no one's going to read a full page of text on that.
Yeah.
They want a tweet. No.
Yeah, so Fight Club. Like, this is one of my talks that I give at the moment at the business school. It's about teaching executives how to do Fight Club with their beliefs. So they get in a ring and they beat the shit out of each other's beliefs. And it's fine to take a punch in the face. It's not a crime in an argument to go down and be questioned.
Hurt someone.
And throw a punch, a real hard one, like from deep inside. But the problem is we've chosen diplomacy, as you say.
You can't say you're wrong to someone anymore.
No.
You have to say, I understand what you're saying, but, which means nothing, because if you understood what they were saying, you would be able to say that's wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. Every child gets a prize.
Participation trophies. Yeah.
No, fuck you. Like, you're a loser, Dave. Don't try not to do it again.
Right. We all knew that kid. I certainly knew a guy who used to sit at the back of our class. He'd put chewing gum in the girl's hair and he'd fart the whole time. And he'd always be slovenly and have like ink all over his shorts or whatever. And he'd swear and carry on. And the teacher would come to him and she'd say, hey, I'm going to leave his name out for this story because I'm not a comedian who can make one up in a moment.
Right.
I would have used his real name and God knows he listens to the podcast. And the teacher would say to him, you know, what's 4 + 4? And he'd go, I don't know. He was stupid.
Yes.
I guarantee you he's amounted to nothing.
Yeah.
In fact, up to about 5 years ago, I had evidence that he amounted to nothing.
Right.
He might have somehow.
Since then.
He discovered the cure to cancer in a year's time. Who
Possible.
Knows? But I don't think so.
Yeah.
We used to know. He was dumb. He was not as smart as the other kids in the class.
Yeah.
You can't say that anymore.
No, you're not allowed to.
And you don't say it because you want to be mean to him.
Yeah.
It's because you need a scale.
Yes.
Right? And there's got to be some kid in the class who's the dumbest and some kid who's the smartest.
Yeah.
I was never the smartest, but I wasn't the dumbest, so I was okay in the middle.
Yeah. And you don't have to, you know, be intolerant. You just have to be accurate. You know, you've got to point out the strengths and weaknesses and you've got to figure them out. Most people aren't honest enough to figure them out for themselves. It's a problem. So we have to teach people it's okay to have gaps in your capability. It's fine.
And the smartest people aren't the ones who know everything.
Absolutely.
It's the ones who know that they don't know everything.
100%. So when I don't know something, I'll fucking find out who in the group knows more. But in this country,
I mean,
it's command and control.
If it was about flicking your snot, I would have gone to this kid.
He was a winner.
Of...
He was the team expert. He was a SEAL, a Navy SEAL of snot flicking. That guy.
What's how's your daughter, dude?
She's
never
cool.
even spoken about. How old is she now?
She's 16. And
are you scared?
Yes, constantly, because I'm a, I have high level of emotional awareness. But
we'll get to what she did in a moment. I want to stop on the 16 thing, because any father whose daughter turns 16, because he knows what men are like,
absolutely,
is suddenly.
Yeah, it's tricky.
She's going out there into the world now.
So it's a huge balance between not being a dick of a dad by holding on too much. No. You can't shelter
smother
people.
Her.
Can't smother them. You can't keep them prisoner. That's going
to
just delay.
But your instinct is to protect.
Instinct is to protect. So it's a balancing act between I got to try and be as threatening as possible without being threatening. So when young men come to visit, I need them to see all my tattoos and just understand that they're not quite sure of how I might react. I would rather not present a consistent.
Are you unbalanced
image.
A little?
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm a little bit.
You put on a bit of a. I might be mentally unstable.
I'll be a bit friendly, but I may just snap at you at any moment. So let's just keep that in the back of your mind. If I can plant those seeds, then hopefully you'll think about that. You know. So it's interesting, but it's a challenge.
You said she worked at the gathering?
Yeah, so she's you know, in between exams, she's decided what she wants to do. And my decision was that I would do what my dad did for me, which was really incredible. When because I was really shit at school. Sometimes I was that guy you describe. And he just sat me one day and he said, look, what is it you want? Just tell me that. Like, I'm tired of asking you what the problem is. Yes. And when he finally got it out of me that I wanted to be a performer of some kind, he shocked the shit out of me by going, but then you've got to be a great performer, because it's a very difficult place to earn a living, and it's just hard. And he's a self-made man. Him and my mum worked very hard. They had nothing when I was born, and then they built a life for themselves with their bare hands. And he shocked me by giving me the backing. So I've done a similar thing. I've said, right, are you at the right school? Where do you want to go after school? What do you want to do? So now we have a little plan, and we're changing. She's changing schools next year. We've identified the college she wants to go to because she wants to study.
So it's woodwork, huh?
You know, that's the way, man. Carpentry. You know, it was good enough for Jesus.
Is it in the entertainment business?
She wants to be a character designer and developer for an animation studio.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so it's a very specific thing she wants to do. And at least we can aim for that now. So we found a school where she can do art and design for the next 2 years.
But that's great. Aren't you relieved she didn't want to become a model, an actor, or a TV star, or a Twitter celebrity?
I am.
Or a comedian even.
Or a comedian, you know.
That would have been terrifying for you.
Horrifying, because then there would always be this messiness between what I do and what she does.
But I had Jesse Clegg in here the other day.
You see, now I worry about that kind of
overlap. I think they're healthy. I think they're healthy because Johnny Clegg is a... He's an anthropologist, and he's a teacher.
Yes, I've heard
so
that.
So he knows how to raise, he knows what to tell kids. And I think he and his wife, there's a lot of love in that family.
Right.
So he let Jesse do his thing and his other son, Jared, do his thing.
Right.
And I think it works for them, but it's very tricky.
I would imagine it's tricky.
I think it's tricky for anyone whose child wants to do what daddy did. Especially in the dictatorship business. Look at Kim Jong-un.
I mean, you see, it's very complicated. This kid is...
Uday and Kusei Hussein. You don't even remember them?
I do. I mean, I roughly do. Them. I remember their bodies sort of bloated and missiles. And,
it's hard.
It's very, Mugabe boys. I mean, they're really struggling at the moment. I mean, what do they do now? In the middle of their plan, it's all the things have changed. And so now what do you do?
And they lost a girlfriend because their mom got all aggro with
cable. They lost a girlfriend. I thought that was hilarious. They're running around Santon with a power cable. Jeez. I mean, it's ironic now, knowing what we know now. They were losing power. So mom was trying to get an extension cable. But I think it'll be good for a daughter. So yesterday she worked on a full production from early in the morning until late at night. Came with me to the second show.
Didn't complain?
No, she was upbeat, and I was amazed. And then last night I got home, she goes, I'm so tired. I'm like, well, now you deserve to sleep, so go to bed. And it was good.
She appreciates, though, how much goes into what you do. She's obviously been behind the scenes with you on planning shows. Did she ever ask you, like, from a curiosity point of view, how do you do that, Dad? And how do you come up with your stuff? And how do you flesh out the material and make it better? And
So she's expressed more interest in like the production side. She hasn't really asked me about the process of writing.
Does she know
comedy.
How famous you are?
She knows people know me. You know, she's often walks up. I'll take the picture. Like she's got the standard approach when someone, excuse me, can we? I'll do it.
She's cool with it.
She's like a little bit of a PR helper. So that's cool. She does my Instagram. That's her new project. She's going to be running my Instagram because she seems to have a much better plan than I do. She doesn't have Twitter. I didn't know that.
That's so good.
Her mates don't have Twitter. They think it's dead.
Yeah, because it is dead.
Yeah. Yeah, we're still picking over the intestines of it.
But dude, this is why what's his name? Stephen Fry. He got off. He got off. He got off at platform zero. He's had a happy life since then. He's still doing what he loves.
And he's doesn't one of miss my it. Absolute heroes.
Doesn't miss it at all.
Really? Mm. Yeah. Look, Stephen Fry's a
just clever guy, huh?
Oh, his talks. His speeches are my favorite things. The one on, he spoke on that topic of is the Catholic Church a force for good?
Yes.
Is one of the greatest speeches.
Christopher Hitchens against the Archbishop of Westminster.
Yes, of Satan, I like to call him.
Yeah, you know, religion. I mean, this is another thing. I used to be one of those I wouldn't say militant. I was a very passionate.
Right.
Irreligionist.
Okay, gotcha.
Because I don't want to say, I don't like the term atheist. It's like saying I'm a non-golfer.
Yeah,
it doesn't make
it's
sense.
Weird.
I don't play, so you don't play golf, big deal. Or I'm a non-astrologer.
Yeah.
I'm not interested in your star sign.
Yes, absolutely.
It's not a position.
Yes.
I'm not passionate about not having a position.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
How could you? Yes, I mean, I get
but
that.
But I've tamed that view because actually if it makes people happy and they're not interfering and causing shit.
Yes.
A lot of religions can't help it. They can't help getting involved in everyone else's life.
100%.
Who hasn't bought into their bullshit.
Yes.
But are you still on the tip? Do you still have a go at religion?
I do in the show. I talk about from the context of, I show a lot of quotes.
I feel they're so beaten down already.
Yeah.
Like, that's also why I'm pulling back. I'm like, these people have got the world ahead of them in terms of work to make any of this make sense to a logical mammal brain.
Yeah, I think George Carlin was very great line. He said, I was a Catholic until I reached the age of reason. And I think you do calm down about it.
Yeah, we don't need to beat them about the head with it.
But also being militant about anything is wrong.
Stupid, right?
So, yeah, well,
the minute you are 100% about something, you know there's a problem.
Yeah, there's a problem, yes. Fanatic, zealot, fundamentalist, 100%, whatever you want to... As long as you get... you're right, I don't have a... I always explain it as I don't believe anything because I don't want to have an argument about this. Like, and I'm a vegetarian, which means I haven't had protein for 12 years. I haven't got the energy to argue about God.
I just had Tim Noakes in here.
Oh my God, like him.
I like him too as a person. Mm. There's a lot about what he says that causes him huge amounts of shit everywhere he goes.
Yes.
He said, tomorrow morning I got to wake up, have a plate of bacon.
Okay. Right.
And no carbs. I mustn't have potatoes or chips or rice or any of that crap that you'd usually have as an accompaniment to a meal. He said, tuck into as much steak as you like.
Have as much steak as you want.
It's good. It's fine. He says... You can be, because I said to him, what do you say to vegetarians?
Yes.
Like you. He says, no, you tell them you respect their decisions, blah, blah, blah. But it is hard to be a vegetarian.
Right.
To get enough of the protein in. And
right.
So are you very disciplined about this, or has it now just become a part of your life?
No, I think it's become a part of my life. I think I would absolutely agree with him that physically you lose strength when you eat only vegetable. I would totally agree with that.
He said muscle mass is a good indicator of longevity, by the way.
Oh, really?
Yeah, which made me a bit nervous because I need to do more in that department. And I suppose you must feel the same when you hear something like that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that it's not a preachy, superior position. I think there's benefits and not benefits. It's difficult to eat, but you do get tired of trying to fucking get protein in. It's just, it's tiring because you're constantly thinking about what else could I eat that's not, you know, it's a bit like boring. I mean, I'm not in love with being a vegetarian. I am one now. I don't know if I maybe got high once and I blew a Hare Krishna. I don't know what happened. I woke up vegetarian and I've just stuck with it. But I would agree with him. I like him. I like the science of this guy. you know.
I can't even tell you. We've been talking for almost an hour, and I feel like there's a thousand things I still wanted to ask you about. One of them was Kanyim Bao and coaching her to do comedy.
Yes.
What was that like? Because she's also an interesting, she's a really interesting girl.
Absolutely. I like Kanyim Bao.
Yeah, me too.
I'm a fan of her. She's very smart. She's very focused. She's hugely professional. I deeply misunderstood her when I first got sight of her on social media. It's frustrating, though, working with her because you meet this very cool, passionate person who spreads so thin, you don't get 100% of Kanyim Bao when you're in the room. So that was the one thing which, because you know, when you get told you've got to make someone into a stand-up comedian in like 36 hours, you forget that that's impossible. It can't happen. So you try and aim to make that person brilliant at stand-up comedy. And then my plan with her was, well, fuck this whole rule thing. Come with me. We'll go and play open spots like for the next 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Couldn't happen. It did not.
She wasn't able to do it. Shit. Pity.
And the bottom line is, because she's not a stand-up comic.
Yeah.
That's not her job focus.
Is that a genes thing or is it a training thing?
I think it might be partially genes and it might be your upbringing. I was learning in my very useful personal development module about Erikson's life stages. I think there are a series of crises that lead you to stand-up comedy. I think if you have the right tools, and there's got to be something wrong with someone who needs a spotlight and a microphone in order to share their thoughts. You know, like I think there's a problem with you. I definitely
you put it that way. It sounds maniacal.
It is a little bit. I prefer to work on my own. I'm very comfortable being an outsider. I think my parents were both outsiders for their own reasons. They grew up outside of, my dad always taught us that clubs that have rules of entry and you don't need to belong to a group that defines you. He was very much an outsider.
And love that.
My mum was divorced before she met my dad. In those days, it was a scandal. She had a child. She was seen largely by some people as a prostitute just for being in that position.
Jesus.
So, I mean, they never relied on...
sorry about your mum's whole comment earlier.
No, absolutely.
I didn't realize I was going straight for the jugular. What a vicious animal I am.
I'm far more vicious,
you know,
casually.
I love this, John. I've known you long enough that we could joke about your mum
being a whore.
Exactly,
this is great. Exactly.
We're real friends.
You know, I mean, where else could this happen? So I
want to go away for the weekend?
Yeah, come on, let's do it. We can finish this conversation. We can take Jonty with us.
Yes.
You know, he'll show us how to touch each other.
Yes, sure. We can explore the other side of the dark iron curtain.
The dark iron curtain. Yeah. Exactly.
Right. To go on to something else, because we touched on this briefly with Kanye. Why are women in comedy still considered controversial? You've observed a lot of successful women in comedy.
Yep.
You've observed a lot of unsuccessful, just like with men.
Yep.
Why is it that women are judged by a completely different set of rules in comedy particularly?
Yeah. So, I used to be a bit poisoned by the kind of male-dominated idea that I understood why. You know, if you ask an older comic, they'll give you a very firm opinion. I don't really have one anymore because I think I've seen so many great comics coming out of South Africa that are just so good that I don't really think about their gender when I watch them. Around the world, the position of female comics is definitely changing.
Mm-hmm.
And literally, it's a fairly new phenomenon. The only answer I really think I have is that the world has largely, until recently, been male-dominated, and I suppose to some degree still is, but I do think it's changing. It's difficult. It has been more difficult for female comics. But the result of that is some fucking great female comics because of the shit and the hardship.
Well, you said just now a series of crises. You would think, I mean, it's not easy, right? We both have, as an outsider, I have an appreciation for how hard it is to get up on a stage and make people laugh.
Right.
It's the hardest. I've said that before.
But you've done it though quite well. Nah, I remember at the religion show you were quite
funny. It's not my environment.
It may not be your favorite thing, but you have some experience of it.
That's not what we're talking about.
Yeah,
I'm saying you guys who do it professionally,
right.
You do this for a living. It's the hardest thing of all. I can come in if I'm here to tell stories and connect with my audience, and we kind of share things and I talk about my life, but I'm not. I don't need to get the applause after every sentence,
right,
which you guys...
Constant approval drug.
But you have to, because that's also how you measure it by other people.
Absolutely.
If you're successful. And if you fall flat on stage, my God, it's a disaster.
It's horrifying. And it still happens, just so everyone knows.
So That's what I'm getting at. It's even for you, it happens.
Absolutely.
So for a girl who has to first put up with this very male-dominated environment, yep. It's not a very female-friendly, like, comedy by its very... Guys, the more we like each other, the ruder we are to each other.
Absolutely.
That is not intuitive to women in the same way. Like, if a woman walks up to her best friend and goes... Oh, you're an ugly old cunt. It's very bad.
Right.
If a guy does that, you kind of want to hug him afterwards.
Yes.
You know
yes,
what I mean?
Yes.
It's just that there's different because you'd be on the hunt together in old Australopithecus time.
Yes.
We'd be on the on the hunt together. And you don't know how to be into. I don't ask you about your feelings.
No.
And if you're slow, I go, come on, you slow asshole.
Yeah, fuck you.
Holding back the whole tribe. We're going to be eaten by the saber-toothed tigers if you don't pick up your pace.
Yes.
And it puts the fear of God into you, and you're going to be left behind, and so we all advance.
Speed up, yes.
But with the women sitting in the cave, it's really, you know, I'm so sorry that Ugg has been cheating on you with Nog. We've got to stop this. And, you know, I understand your feelings. So
yes.
We've developed differently. And you put a woman on a stage in front of a crowd who can be very hostile.
Oh, absolutely. Completely hostile.
For her to break through, that is the first barrier. For her to even survive that,
yeah,
it takes 10 times the strength of a guy.
Yeah. Well, I think it is quite a, it's quite an ego-driven art form. You know, we're on our own. We want all the credit ourselves. So that's the first thing. I think it's counterintuitive to women to be ego-driven, I think. Again,
because they nurture.
It's ego-driven of me to say that.
I'm not saying every woman.
Well, exactly. There's some fuckers who are not, you know, at all nurture-driven.
I know women who are more masculine than me.
Exactly.
And again, I'm not using that as a pejorative term.
Well no, I think it's difficult. The older I get, the less I understand that kind of gender. I can't speak on behalf of women. I think in the industry,
I'm trying, and I don't want to trip you up on this. I'm certainly not trying to catch you out.
Yes.
It's from the point of view that I'm curious.
You know, absolutely. Okay. What I can tell you is there's a lot of advantage. There's a lot of... So in other words, in our bookings business, we get more and more inquiries where it's not negotiable. It has to be a female act.
Oh.
So there is a kind of a
it's like a W-E-E. It's like a we.
It's W-E-E. It's we. Exactly.
We need a we.
It's we-e-e. And so there is an attempt to try and correct it, and I think it's working. I think you've got very powerful women breakthrough. Gentle women on stage don't generally surface quickly. You're not going to find someone who's meek on stage, powering forward as a woman. I think you've got very strong women, like Celeste and Thule is like a force of nature. Yeah. Tuma Morocco is a very powerful.
Nina
can be very.
These are women, they will fuck your brains
out. So they punch their way, kick the door down, you know, they grab your balls and beat you to death, you know, with their humor.
Right.
So I mean,
you wouldn't enter into an argument with these ladies lightly.
Joan Rivers, you know.
Correct.
Boom.
They're fearsome.
Fearsome women, exactly.
And again, maybe I should have used the word fierce because Beyonce's kind of made that a battle cry.
Right.
And it doesn't sound like you're being pejorative when you use it.
Yes.
But it is tougher. And for some reason, there are different rules. For some reason.
Absolutely.
We can't help it. It's not always fair. Sometimes it works for the women. Sometimes it works against them.
Yes.
But it is different.
Definitely different. And it's more difficult. So the sadness is, well, you know, that happens. I suppose the good thing is it does poke the fierce gland, and there's nothing like watching someone who just doesn't give a fuck on stage beating the shit out of a crowd, and it's beautiful to watch. You know, I love watching that. So,
the crowd leave feeling abused, dirty.
And, you know, like you've had a proper mauling. It's wonderful. You loved it, but you're quite glad it's over. You know,
it appeals to that masochism. I think everybody's got a little bit of sado and a little bit of masochism in them.
I think so. Yeah. I think it gives us shade, you know, light and dark. So I think, I think it's getting better. If I look at the overseas, I sound like Antwoord, but
if I look at the overseas,
but the global comedy world, it's getting better. This whole Me Too thing, I think. To a degree, it's sort of an upside.
Is there's solidarity, and you don't feel like you're the only victim. And often these are powerful men, so it allows women to stand together.
You need a group to go and take them down. Yes,
I'm not a critic of it a priori. I think
right. There are some people riding on the coattails where he was on the phone and he whacked off and I had to listen to it. Okay, fuck you. Like, let's just can we keep this real? You know,
I had this. This is I don't want to go here, but since we're on this trajectory. I read the most fascinating article about all of this stuff that's going on. Because it's intriguing. It's these powerful people.
Yes,
and these, you know, these glamorous actresses. And you think they would never be approached by some man in a bathrobe and jerking off in a pot plant.
Just in the pot plant.
And then it happens and you're like, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah.
So I read this article. The guy says, you've got to be very careful. On the one hand, you've got rape, which is a very serious thing.
Yes.
There are legal consequences. There is a social consequence to it. There's a reputational consequence to it. And then you've got that fumbling, drunken, stupid, almost adolescent, not necessarily knows what to do with the penis or the vagina behavior.
Yes.
Like we all, at varsity or at high school, we all had those experiences where you're not really sure, is this okay? Am I? And
right.
It's awkward and stupid.
Yes.
And he said, those two are at very, very different ends of the spectrum.
Yeah.
The closer you get to the middle, the more you blur the two. It has the effect of making rape seem funny and stupid and not particularly consequential.
Right.
And it has the effect of elevating fumbling drunken sex to being rape.
Yes.
Neither of which must ever happen.
Right.
Because that's bad for both.
Yes. And I think clarity is such an, you know, the Buddhists call confusion the first poison out of which all poisons arise. So this is a beautiful term. And we do that now. And you're right, because you teach a child that who's fucked up that they're a rapist.
Yeah.
That is an incredibly horrific sentence to give a child. So you've got to be very careful. And you've got these, like, you know, weekend experts on Twitter and fuck, you know, we've
and
taken
people
down.
People want to take down ANN7. And you have to explain to them, don't conflate things that are not related.
Yes. Yeah, fraud is fraud. You know, a shit news channel. I've loved ANN7. I think it's the greatest sitcom ever designed. It's the
From
biggest
day,
budget.
I love it. And it's such a huge budget. And those the news anchors would screw up regularly. It was such great material for me.
Absolutely. Did you not hear the other day when the newsreader fucked it up and she said, big news now, the president of South Africa has of Zimbabwe, Robert Mugabe, has resigned.
No!
Oh my God, it's on Twitter. You've got to see it.
It's so great.
It's
please send it
beautiful.
To me.
Beautiful. Someone
fantastic.
Screenshotted it while it was happening.
And on ANN7, the irony is palpable.
Oh, it's magnificent.
God, Jimmy Munye must have had a shit fit.
He shat himself. And I just, you know, when we were at the gathering in Cape Town where the BLF arrived and tried very hard to get in and we managed to get them removed. And then, but we filmed them leaving.
12 of them?
Absolutely. We filmed them leaving and they were picked up in a red Audi A3, which the journalists, because you've got every single investigative journalist of any importance in the country in the audience who then took the picture, ran a trace, and discovered that that car was paid for by a bank transfer from Brian Molefe.
That's unbelievable.
Can you imagine Brian Molefe's house? Like, Jesus, what the fuck is wrong with you? Are you guys drunk? And then Andile going, yep.
Well, they'd have to be. Andile, what? This guy, I used to sit and talk to him.
Look, really?
Well, we had a couple of civil discussions.
Okay.
He had good ideas.
Right.
He's not unintelligent.
No, he's articulate.
It's amazing what people will do for money.
It's unbelievable.
Because he saw, he was thrown out of the EFF.
Yes.
And he didn't have a political home, much like Jacob Zuma when he was thrown out of the deputy presidency.
Right.
And the bedfellows you make when you're vulnerable.
In the cold, yep.
Wow, that's a very, very, you've got to be super careful about who you cozy up to in your darkest hour. Because they will define you and they will own you.
Own you, yeah.
And they will exploit every trace of credibility that is left in you. And whatever intellectual capacity you have, you are, by proxy, giving to another person.
Completely colonized.
It's so dangerous. It's colonization.
It's exactly
it's so it dangerous. And I don't know that Andile Mfletama will ever be able to recover from this reputationally. I think Brian Molefe is screwed. I think he's screwed. Mm. I think people like Carl Niehaus have always had a problem
well,
with credibility.
Well, you know, he's just a serial fraudster. I mean,
absolutely.
He just collected money for cancer treatment that he never had.
What kind of a... It's like when Alan Busack stole that money that was for the children.
You know,
do you remember that?
Yes, what was it? If you cross Alan Busack with a dog, you get a donation pincher.
Oh, there's such good stuff here. I love talking to you.
Thanks, man. It's good to have
good to
a decent
you,
conversation. They don't happen often.
Yeah, I don't want to exhaust you now. I mean, we've done really well.
We've done good.
If we go
Let's
5 minutes more,
and then fizzle.
It'll fizzle.
Yeah, it'll fizzle. We don't want to leave on a down.
Been pretty good. Let's keep it there. All right. Love it. Thanks, John.
Thanks for having me.
This is CliffCentral.com.